We go from a really murdery thriller full of obtuse clues and elaborate production design to a really patriotic thriller full of obtuse clues and elaborate production design. Seriously, it's like this one's the all-ages escape room and last week was the adults-only version. Anyway, it's National Treasure, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
This is the number one movie in America. I'm here with Greed and Sloth. I don't know. That doesn't
That
work.
Is correct. I am definitely Sloth.
I don't know if I consider myself Greed, but that is one of the least gruesome murders in that movie. So I'll take it.
I wasn't going to call either of you Lust or Pride. You know, that's not nice. And...
yeah. Given if my lifestyle permitted, I would definitely be a Sloth.
Right. Yeah. 7 last week. Here's what I want to do. Hey, Happy New Year, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Happy New Year.
Welcome to calendar year 3 of the number one movie in America. I know it seems like 10.
Wow. That's just
but still, it
actually doesn't. It doesn't even seem like it's been like we've been doing this for like this is the 3rd year. I still feel like it was just yesterday when we all gathered around with the grandiose idea to do this. And
I agree.
It's because we look at the list and we're like, we haven't even scratched the surface. There are too many
right.
Number one movies. It's like, no, we haven't hit Back to the Future yet. Will we ever? Who's to say? But I bring that, I say Happy New Year to note that now that it's the new year, I want to make a point during this indistinct early episode period where we mentioned last week's episode. This is where I'm going to drop in the result as a little recap. Because what kept happening was... I would get the score, but like I wouldn't be able to on the fly look at the spreadsheet and be like, this ranks blank overall. And it's the, you know, some of those numbers. And I especially wanted to do that because I look and 7 is now our 7th favorite movie that we've done. It ranks number 7 overall.
That's awesome. Hey, so. I might be like shooting myself in the foot with this, but you both made this joke on Twitter about 7, the 7 or whatever. I don't get it. What is that?
Because it's often written out as letters S-E, the number 7, and then E-N.
Gotcha.
Also, I made that joke without seeing that Sean had made it, and then I was like, oh no, I did the thing.
I stole it from you the week before, because
did
you
I
said
say it the week
7
before?
In when Camila revealed that was the subject.
Well, then I feel better about not doing it in the actual episode.
We're just stealing the same joke back and forth and forgetting.
It's just one of my favorite jokes. It's so stupid.
That's putting a number in the title of the thing. Is always bad, but it's especially bad here because a 7 doesn't look like a V.
Right. I don't know.
It's a 7. But it is our 7th favorite film that we've covered among the 70 plus, because there have been some double features. And to take a look at our top 10, we haven't done that in a while.
Right.
Our favorite is still Alien. 89.5 was the score for Alien. Pulp Fiction, hot on its heels at 88. In third place, Speed, 87 and two-thirds, followed by Ocean's 11 at an 87. Purple Rain and The Fugitive are tied at fifth and sixth, 85 and two-thirds. Purple Rain outranks because it has the higher individual score. So Purple Rain is fifth, The Fugitive is sixth, followed by 7 in seventh at 85 and a third. Then Aliens, Toy Story 4, and Home Alone. Rounding out the top 10. So we've hit a lot of our favorites recently. That's nice.
Yeah, that's also quite an eclectic list, too. There's like everything is kind of represented very well there.
I mean, it is eclectic, except that, with the exception of Toy Story 4, which is just so good that it cannot be denied, we like the mid-90s and earlier best.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense given our age bracket.
Right.
Yeah.
There's always that little bit of nostalgia, plus I guess, I don't know, it's difficult to see a movie in the 80s and not be sarcastic about it like now.
Well, 7 was also tied. Camila's highest ever ranking, the 95 Camila gave to Purple Rain, was repeated in 7, and that is just just behind the highest ranking anyone has ever given on this show, Robin's 96 for Speed. That is
stand by it.
I feel like Seven and Purple Rain accurately represent me as a person.
Yeah, there are two wolves.
The duality in which my personality.
If you played Purple Rain over the what's in the box scene, how does that change?
I'll let you know next week.
My friend Bethany just keeps cutting Laura Palmer's theme from Twin Peaks over unrelated film footage. Like, maybe the best one was it playing as Jason's mom is beheaded at the end of Friday the 13th. And it's funny every time.
That sounds awesome.
Swelling soap opera-esque.
Oh my God. Speaking of, have you heard the Christmas album that's the Twin Peaks theme?
Why? No.
I probably should have mentioned this weeks ago, but I think it's the same composer that did the Twin Peaks score, but they also did a Christmas album. I'll send you the actual name on Spotify, but it's great. It's only probably like maybe it's less than 10 tracks, but
damn.
Okay, so it's Jurek Bischoff is what is the composer. Mm. Maybe it's not the same composer, but it's definitely done in the style of Twin Peaks, and it's chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Walk with me.
Oh my God.
This is a thing now that, especially in the age of like, I made an album and dropped it on SoundCloud and Spotify. People are just putting out albums that are like inspired by Twin Peaks instrumental music, and we're all just eating it up. But to new business, where do we all come in? What is our personal history with stealing the Declaration of Independence and all things National Treasure franchise?
I have never seen the National Treasure franchise, either of them. Never really been, I never had the feeling to. I was just like, okay.
Until now, right?
Okay.
No. I more meant that you weren't like, I don't want to do this. I'm just going to show up for the podcast.
It's like, I never felt the need to actually watch it. And I still have it. So it's going to be a great conversation, guys.
I'll just listen in, add some color commentary.
Robin, you said last week that you were a, perhaps not a National Treasure stan, but at least had an appreciation.
I own this movie on DVD. I genuinely enjoy it. Like, I do think that I am influenced by when this movie came out. I was a very patriotic person. And like, when I went to the National Archives when I was in high school, I like lost my mind. Like, I was like, oh my God, it's living history, blah, blah, blah. I was that kind of person. So the whole premise of this movie is Robin Catnip.
Right.
Well, I know I saw it. For some reason, all that I remember about seeing this, 16 years ago, is there's a guy I went to college with, and he was like really let down by the quality of the treasure at the end.
What? Was like, what did you want? Like,
wait. Rolls from the Library of Alexandria.
That's exactly what I said to him. I was like, do you not appreciate the cultural relevance of what they have just found? It completely opens up so many academic fields. Also, it's worth like $10 billion. Like, I don't know what he thought it was going to be, a portal to, you know, 1776 space version. Whatever it was, he was like, oh, it was just stuff. They just found stuff. It's like the best stuff.
What did you think? Like, yeah, honestly, like, yeah, it's stuff. It's like rooms and rooms and rooms full of stuff.
It's certain items of historic and intrinsic value, as Dick Cage says in this movie.
But if you haven't, or if you have not revisited in some time, why don't I tell you what this movie is about?
Yes,
as it is my turn for the 60-second recap. Would someone like to time me?
Yep, and go.
There's a big old treasure tied to the Knights Templar and Freemasons hidden somewhere in America by the Founding Fathers. The Gates family, including our hero Nicolas Cage and his grump-faced dad, John Voight, have been looking for it for generations. Let's skip ahead to what is found where, and then we'll fill in the rest. He finds a sunken ship, which has a pipe, which says there's a clue on the back of the Declaration of Independence, which says that there's a clue on some letters Ben Franklin wrote, which says that there's something important in Independence Hall, which is a set of special 3D glasses that reveal the final clue on the Declaration of Independence, which leads to the treasure beneath Philadelphia. Anyway, Nicolas Cage and his useless buddy are competing with Sean Bean, who is like Nicolas Cage but mean, and eventually end up getting Diane Kruger, who works for the National Archives and probably is going to get fired for this no matter what, wrapped up in the whole mess. Also, Harvey Keitel just plays the wolf from Pulp Fiction again. That's fun. Nicolas Cage finds the treasure and humanity's cultural knowledge is enhanced while our heroes get rich. Sean Bean and his people go to jail despite only doing the same crimes that Nicolas Cage did.
Okay, I think you got it in 60 seconds. It might have been 61.
That's a
I'm
lot.
I'm counting it for myself because that was a lot to pack in.
Yeah,
that's a lot, especially you actually breaking down the clues which led to this and that. And
I do think that the treasure is buried under New York, though, right? They go,
oh,
they
Broadway go to, and Wall Street.
One of that's the right. like common criticisms of this movie is that they go from Washington, D.C., and some of the characters go all the way to Boston without, like, really any travel. They sort of depict that corridor as, like, you know, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump over to Boston from New York. Not 6 hours drive, no.
I appreciate the nod to what Harvey Keitel just playing the wolf, because that's what I was thinking. I was like, do we need this? Do we need Harvey Keitel? Was he
last week when I teased that when I saw this movie with my friends, we laughed so hard that people shushed us. It was at the appearance of Harvey Keitel.
Because he just rolls in like, hi, I'm Harvey Keitel right? doing my Harvey Keitel thing, and I'm going to be here talking to people.
And it just, he doesn't fit with the rest of the movie.
It's real. It's very jarring. It's like, oh, okay. Hey, yeah. Hey, Harv. What, glad to see you made it.
It's like if Jessica Tandy showed up, she was dead at that point. But basically,
before I switch to Faxi, I want to like get a read for where we're all at on Ocean 1776 because
cute.
Thank you. I think I'm right in between because it is a movie with Indiana Jones sensibilities and Scorpion King direction. Like, it has all of the fun and spirit of the kind of adventure movie I like, and it's just so kind of blandly presented. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of this presentational, like, unambitious direction. It just doesn't have, like, the drive and punch that I want, even though I like what's going on.
Yeah, it's an enjoyable ride, but I don't give a shit about the Declaration of Independence as a person or most of American history stuff. So I just kind of the urgency wasn't felt for me. And all I just kept thinking was, yeah. Really, Abigail? This is doing a lot for your job. I don't think that you really should be doing all this. At the whatever, at the gala, I've been like, I think he has it. And then I would have left. I'm going to go on back inside to enjoy the rest of the party.
It's that guy with the big forehead. I've got stuff to do.
Right. And the other thing, and my other criticism type thing about this is that why cast Nicolas Cage if you're not going to let him Nicolas Rage? Like, I don't understand.
I feel like it works. And I think that it works better than it would work with a normal actor in the role.
Like, he did a great job. Like, I'm not going to take it away from him. Like, I appreciated him in this, but I was just waiting for him to at any point.
That's true. Scraping at the door.
Scraping at the door.
I really do think that Nicolas Cage's crazy eyes, sorry to use that word, but helps him with this character because this character does things that are ridiculous a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like it helps explain it. And then I also think that Nicolas Cage is so good at being really sincere about really corny things.
Huh.
Right? Like, I feel like that's like the underappreciated side of Nick Cage. Like, see also Moonstruck, I think is a great example of him doing that. Like, I just think that he can sell, I care about this, when it seems a little silly.
Interesting. I guess I haven't seen enough of those Nick Cage roles.
I think he's one of the only people who can, I mean, he might be here for his ability to deliver kind of stupid exposition in a really sincere way. Like, they find the glasses and he says, it's some kind of ocular device. You mean glasses? It's some kind of... And a lot of people saying that would be like, eh, and you're like, yeah, that's how Nicolas Cage talks. Sure.
And when he goes on his little deduction rants, mm-hmm. like, I think that that's something, you know, I like detective stories, but like, even with like a lot of Sherlock Holmes things, like the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock, I hate when he goes to his mind palace and starts working his way through things. I'm like, I'm bored. But Nicolas Cage makes very absurd, questionable deductions and makes it interesting to watch, at least. Mm. In the beginning when they're on the boat and he's like, it was firm, it was resolute. No. It was willful. Like, I'm on board with that.
By the way, digging that boat out with no obvious construction equipment is like Clark Griswold getting the tree out of the frozen ground in Christmas Vacation. Yes. Like, you cut away because there's no way to even theoretically convey you doing that.
I was left with the question of, wouldn't the boat in itself have been worth like a bunch of money?
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been like a score, like, win.
Stop there.
Right, yeah. Look at that. We found Charlotte. All right, let's go home.
Mm-hmm. Right, and he's like, I'm just gonna break this pipe.
Right.
Just switch. Look, I know that Christopher Plummer is older than John Voight, but who cares? Switch their roles so that we can be done with John Voight in 5 minutes and we get to hang out with Christopher Plummer the whole time. Yeah. John Voight is in his natural state as a contentious, unpleasant asshole, but like, I hate having him around.
I was really disappointed that Christopher Plummer didn't come back. I'm like, oh, so we're just stuck with old John here. And like 75% of his dialogue was, what was it? It just leads to another clue. It's like, why are you here?
Right.
I
don't understand his character. I don't understand if he was ever on board and became disillusioned. Like, there are moments when he gets excited by this stuff. He is definitely a weak link in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're deep into it now. The Faxi segment will not take long because there's just a dearth of interesting facts about National Treasure. It comes down to, they wanted to make a movie. They did. It did pretty well.
Good for them.
Yeah. Hey, it worked out. It was released November 19th of 2004, the 34th number one film of the year, winning its opening weekend with $35.1 million. It was close. It beat the debuting SpongeBob SquarePants movie, which finished in second with $32 million. The Thanksgiving was the next weekend. National Treasure repeated at number one, $45 million over that five-day weekend. Christmas with the Cranks also came out $30 million for a long weekend. Alexander came out $21.8 million, but National Treasure easily repeated and won a third weekend. It is a three weekend number one movie in America. The only debut that third weekend was Closer, remember, with Natalie Portman and Jude Law.
Loved it.
I'm worried that doesn't hold up. I loved that movie at the time, and it's one of those where I'm like kind of afraid to go back to
it. It's been a long time since I've rewatched it.
When I think about certain parts of the plot, I'm like, but the performances were uniformly wonderful.
Mm-hmm. That was like the hot play script when I was in college. And a student group was very ambitiously putting on a production of Closer that, like, my first semester I was cast in, but I couldn't do it because I had to, you know, have like a standing in the background part in like an official school of theater production. And it broke my heart because I desperately wanted to, you know, have been in Closer. Mm. And because I had a huge crush on the girl who they cast in the Natalie Portman role. This is terrible in two ways. So I can wear a fancy suit and say four words in a production of Twelfth Night. Anyway, Closer only debuted in fifth that weekend at $7.7 million. National Treasure finally fell to third in its fourth weekend behind Ocean's 12 and Blade Trinity. Bounced in and out of the top 10 well into 2005. There were a lot of holiday releases that year, so it fell down, then it came back up, hung on to make $173 million. It is the ninth top-grossing film of that year, and a three-weekend win was very rare at the time. This was the period where there was usually a new number one every week. The only three-week winners that year were National Treasure, Shark Tale, there's something everyone forget, and Passion of the Christ, which was its own phenomenon that spring. Even stuff, there were huge movies that year that did better than this. Spider-Man 2, Shrek 2. Shrek 2 was the number one movie of the year. Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. These all made more money, but they only won two weekends. Good for you, Nick. The sequel in 2007, National Treasure Book of Secrets, an even bigger hit than this one.
Wow.
Debuted in first the weekend before Christmas, made $65.4 million. Over a five-day Christmas weekend, went on to earn $219.9 million, the eighth top-grossing film of the year. So it's weird that there hasn't been a third one yet. It's just shifted in and out of development for 12 years. You know, they get close and then they get distracted because Disney just does a lot. There was a new script being worked on as of early 2020. Who knows? Everything is up in the air. But they're talking about a third movie with the original cast. They're also talking about a Disney Plus spinoff series with a young cast. Literally every movie and show in the history of the Disney franchise, someone is talking about a Disney Plus version. So
That could probably go over well. I mean, it's not like anything I'm interested in, but I could see it like doing its thing and being cute and educational all at the same time.
Yeah. I feel like I'm more into the idea of National Treasure, the next generation, than National Treasure with very old Nick Cage and
You would think a
completely desiccated corpse of John Voight.
At one point, he said, "I want this to go to South America next time." And I want to be like, it's national treasure. It's not international treasure.
I think international treasure might be cool, right? It's like, yeah, there are nations in South America. Let's find out about their national treasures. Also, they go to the UK in the second one.
I definitely haven't seen the second one. It's about how John Wilkes Booth was a good guy.
What?
No, it is not. I don't remember the... maybe it is, the overarching plot has something to do with their ancestor is implicated in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln and they need to clear his name, which is a dramatically less interesting drive than finding a huge amount of treasure.
Do you really need to clear this person?
Right, exactly.
There's some villains that were like, you know, it's fine, whether or not.
It's like, it's nice that that's the biggest problem in your life, is that some fucking old ass ancestor who's been dead for hundreds of years.
Right. There may be more to it than that. That's what I remember. And come on.
Yeah. Well said, come on. Really, I dug for like trivia or casting. There's so little. I mean, all of it is like, this is a subtle reference to the name of a founding father. Great. Good for you. Cool. All I can tell you is when Sean Bean and his crew are planning the heist in DC, there's an establishing shot of the building they're doing it in, and that establishing shot is of the Watergate Hotel. That's cute.
We'll talk about that in You Can't Handle the Truth.
About Watergate?
Yeah, where Diana lives in Wonder Woman 1984.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
Well, we'll save it. And finally, they were not permitted to film in Independence Hall. Fortunately, there's a complete recreation of Independence Hall at Knott's Berry Farm, so they just filmed it there. They were, however, allowed to film in the Tower of Independence Hall. This is the first movie ever filmed using the actual Tower of Independence Hall. So
cool. Cute.
Yeah, I liked it. It's very watchable. It's very interesting. Holy crap, is it slow. This is fine. It's watchable, but I screamed out loud when I paused and saw I was only 35 minutes into it. I'm like, it's because it starts with this flashback that's a little weighty and then has this sequence that would be the climactic sequence in a lot of movies on the ship, which is just the first thing. It's like, man, we've been through a lot of movie. Right. Oh, no, we haven't. We haven't even stolen the Declaration of Independence yet. I like it. I just think it's kind of slow.
It does kind of chug along after a while. And I thought for sure Sean Bean was going to be dead within, like, on the boat. Because that's his thing, right?
Deal. That's what he does.
He shows up, gets killed, gets paid. That's how he rolls.
Right. But not in this movie.
Oh.
I think that it's just hard for me because I love this movie when I first saw it. And there are so many little moments that I still think hold up as really great. So I kept getting like, oh, this part that I love is about to happen, right? I have a question. I am curious if it came up in your research. Was the Abigail character always supposed to be German, or did they cast Diane Kruger and just go with it?
That did not come up in my research.
Okay.
It's a question.
One of the things that I like in this movie is when they're like, what's going on with you? And she's like, I am an American. I just wasn't born here. And then another little moment that I was wrong about is at some point he's explaining his plan and she says verdammt, right, which means like damn it, but I have always heard that as that's dumb. Which is true, his plans are dumb, and I like her. I think she's a spitfire and I like her character.
It was a good character, and I mean, yeah, on paper, yes, this thing does like work. I see. I get it. Why it was number one. I get it. Why you enjoy it. I get it. Why so many people enjoyed it. And it's just, again, I just felt nothing to connect me to anything that was happening, any of the urgency. And I was also distracted a lot by like every time they unearthed something. It's like, what kind of spores are you inhaling right now? like they should walk away with some sort of respiratory problem at this point.
Also, like, all of the stuff with this giant cave underneath the city is questionable,
right,
to me. like, there is so much subway under New York City that, like, it would take a lot to not ever dig into that thing.
Right.
Maybe. So, I don't know for sure.
It seems like it would take a lot. And I also was questioning, like, well, does that mean the church actually owns all this stuff under here now? How long is the church? Like,
well, no. I mean, like, you don't have oil, gas, and mineral rights under your property. So.
Yeah, I don't know. These are the questions that come up in my head. I have no idea.
Yeah, is there a finder's keeper's law? Is right. it like
right? Like, I was just...
I found an incredible stash of antiquities, so they're mine right. now. Like,
yeah, like, I was surprised that anybody gave him anything at all. Like, so
right. I think not going to prison would be
yeah.
really all he could ask for.
Right. So they were going to give him 10%, and he's like, no, that's too much. Like, the fuck, like, sir, do you know what we went through, Riley? He should have spoken up a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
The opposite of Diane Kruger, for me, I initially just wrote it down as, who is this Putsy Joe here? The
sidekick. I like before. Putsy Joe.
I like him too.
Thank you.
Oh, no.
I wasn't. No,
I mean, that could be a nudge.
I'm not exactly sure, like, what he really brought to the team, except, like, apparently he knew how to use the computer a little bit better than Diane Kruger.
And he knows about daylight saving time. I love that scene. I love that scene as someone who knows a lot of trivia. When other people have known trivia that I don't know, that's exactly how they treat me. And I'm like, yep. I also love when they are talking through everything in the National Archives, and it's like, in the preservation room, do you know what that's for? And he says, delicious jams and jellies.
Okay, that was good. Yes.
I like how he didn't
do
know.
I understand, like, not liking him. He is kind of pointless comic relief, but.
But I kind of needed
him. And I'm on board.
Right. And when he, like, hugs me, he's like, oh, I'm staring at this giant green-like statue with a man with a very interesting beard that I can only imagine is significant in some way. And he hugs him.
Yep.
And I'm like, hey, that's me. That's where I am, sir. I have very poor historical knowledge. Yes. I imagine this is significant for some reason, and I'm going to hug it.
If we're going to have a sidekick, like, I would make him interesting in some way. Like, not to keep going back to Indiana Jones, but it's either Jonathan Rhys Davies or... a tiny admitted racial caricature, or, you know, or Sean Connery. Like,
Sean Connery. Yeah, what was Sean doing? You could, I'm sure Sean.
He would have been a better John Voight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know he has good chemistry with Nick Cage
right,
from The Rock.
True. Right.
Putsy Joe was Justin Bartha. I had to look up the only other thing that he's known for.
Geely and 40, The Bachelor. What is it? The Hangover.
Oh, that's right.
I and no one but Robin thought of Geely.
I said Geely also.
I've never actually seen Geely, but I remember when it came out, I was like, oh, that poor guy from National Treasure.
So which was first?
When did Geely come out? That was after this?
I thought Geely was before this.
Yes, before this. It's 2003.
I think it's before that. My favorite thing about Geely is that one of the factors that was said to contribute to its failure was that people didn't know how to pronounce it and got nervous when they went up to the ticket booth.
Oh my God.
That, right. Like, in addition to all the other problems, they said, we believe a significant number of people wanted to see this movie, got in line, couldn't decide how to pronounce the word Geely, and said, one for White Oleander, and just picked something else at the last
minute. That was the problem. Yeah.
I feel like the obvious way to pronounce it is giggly, and nobody wants to say that.
Right.
I would like to say giggly, please.
I was pronouncing it like that for a very long time.
No, I do think of him as the guy who is missing in the first Hangover movie. And when he was not missing for the second Hangover movie, didn't add much. Going from not present to present did not add a whole lot.
No.
We watched Hangover Part 2, and I don't remember him in it, so...
Yeah, he's the least interesting person in the Hangover movies, so good. Don't put that on your resume. My thing, like the spores for Camila, the what are you doing, what are you inhaling, was, why are you still carrying the Declaration of Independence?
Because they're assuming there's more clues on it, which turns out to be correct.
I know, but put it in a van, in the van or something. Like, first off, he rolls it up like a dorm room poster, like It's like, ah, that's important. It's going to crumble. Right. And then for the rest of the movie, he's just slinging it over his shoulder like it's a camp chair. Like, maybe we find a safe spot. Could you rent a locker? Rent a locker at the bus station.
I'm sure you'll be okay. And then also, like they make a big deal with the gloves and everything at first. And then after that, it's just like a free-for-all. It's like, fuck it. Like, I don't care. Like, the destructive oils in your fingers. Nope, doesn't matter anymore. We got what we needed. Real wham, bam. Thank you, ma'am, Nick. God.
Also, why does John Boyd have so many lemons?
He was going to make lemonade that day. And he's still pissed off about, you owe me 12 lemons.
If it were this year, I would understand, because we needed 2 limes and put it on our shipped order, and they misread it and brought us 2 bags of limes.
Oh, so my
for the
God.
Next week, we were like, we got to eat more limes. Put them in the water, anything.
Am I supposed to put them on my eyes? Is that how this works?
Don't do that.
Definitely not. For all of my griping, which has been extensive, to a certain extent, it hardly matters, because, like, we're going on a fun adventure and there's clues and we're in interesting places and people put things together and dramatically reveal, and it works. It's preposterous at every stretch, but, like, man, do I wish that I had discovered this for the first time on a plane, because it's just like, oh, I'm going to watch this and keep, oh, they found the next thing. I wonder when, oh, it's another thing. It's just... easily.
It's an ocular device. Ooh, what's that? I do appreciate, I like the whole, you know, riddle solving and ciphers and all that stuff, and because it's kind of exhausting. Have you guys ever tried to the Hunt the Killer? Robin, you probably have not.
But no.
It's like escape room in a box, and you know, they send you things and there's clues and there's ciphers and whew, some of that stuff it's very difficult. So I have a very big appreciation for anybody that can crack the codes of things, such as whoever cracked the code on the recent Zodiac killer.
Right. Which reminds me, one of the times that I did have to work on cracking a code was my sister went to MIT and they have like a big treasure hunt every year. And when I was visiting one year when it was going on, and there was like a semaphore code that was from a Sherlock Holmes story.
Interesting.
I think. And so we had to I was like mapping out this code in like a spiral bound notebook. And I do find it very satisfying, but also frustrating.
Yeah. Like, I want to believe that I'm the type of person that could crack a code, or, you know, I want to feel like, yeah, I could figure that out. But it's, truth be told, I would have never, like, it would have ended if in the attic where I was concerned.
I would have been like, Grandpa, are we knights?
Right.
And then gone to dig a hole in the dirt with a stick.
Well, on that note, anything else before we rate the most national of treasures?
Nope.
I got nothing.
Oh, weird wigs. Some weird wig choices on the bald gentleman in this film. Like, Nick Cage's, why give him such a big forehead if you're gonna give him a hairpiece? Just bring it down a little bit.
I was questioning that. I was like, at certain points his hair was just like way up there.
Yeah. And then John Voight's weird blonde hair.
The most fitting and appropriate use of John Voight is on Seinfeld, when George Costanza becomes convinced he owns John Voight's car and tries to confront John Voight about him, and John Voight just bites him and runs away. Like, yep, that's you.
John Voight was on an episode of Seinfeld?
That's all he did. He bit George and left.
That feels right.
I like some of his old movies, but
what's
his personality? Or once I became aware of his personality...
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want anything to do with that.
Well, it's time to rate the Da Vinci Code, but set on easy mode. I give it a, I started at 68 and I took away 5 points for the annoying, shut up, Diane Kruger, you talk too much, runner. That killed 5 points for me. So 63. Camila?
64.
And for a higher number,
76.
There it is. Okay. 1776.
I thought 1776. I was like, let's be cute.
Very nice. So not too far apart. We end up on a 67 2/3 for National Treasure. Hey, there's new bingo cards, everybody. Yay. We've had them for a while, but we decided with a listener-selected episode, a Camila-selected episode, the holiday specials, we would just hold off until the end of the year. But now that we are in 2021, let's take a look. Anything here?
Was there a pickup truck? I feel like there was a pickup truck.
Also feel like there was a pickup truck, but I wasn't watching for it. Right. I made the mistake again.
I forgot. Yeah.
I know that there's a bunch of vans.
Right.
I think it's all vans.
Yeah, I can't be sure.
Let's not check it off for now. Right. And listeners, if you happen to know if there's a pickup truck in National Treasure, please inform us immediately.
The guy in the beginning, he wasn't an American president.
No. Okay. That was one thing I was watching for. I was like, I can't remember if at any point they actually show anyone. They don't.
Do any of us have any crushes on anyone in this movie?
No.
Decidedly no.
All right.
Diane Kruger's lovely. Not really on my list.
Let me tell you about John Voight. No.
Well, so the bingo card comes back, but we don't check a single thing off. More action next week, we hope. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth, and I think we've got some business to cover. So, Wonder Woman 1984.
I did not see it.
You missed it? You did not watch it?
No, didn't watch it yet.
I did not like it, and I'm disappointed.
Yeah, I keep hearing really bad reviews, so I haven't been rushing to see it.
Yeah, don't. Like, I do think it. If you enjoyed the first one, and if you care about that character, like, I think it's worth watching. But, like, I also think that maybe going in with, like, knowing that a lot of people don't like it would make it better. But on the other hand, like, the first review, I didn't read it because I tend not to read reviews before I see movies, but Angelica Bastien wrote I knew it was like a serious pan, and so I was, and I really like her criticism, and so I was like braced for not liking it. And then in the whole first hour I was like, I don't know why this has bad buzz, I'm really enjoying it. And then it just increasingly wore on me. The things that weren't working became more and more part of the plot. Like, the Max Lord character, played by Pedro Pascal, is just boring to me. And he gets like as much screen time, if not more, than Wonder Woman.
Now, see, I have a question about that, because I've seen a gif of him stripping in the wind, and I just wonder where that is. What's that about?
I've seen it twice now, and he does not strip in the wind.
He's like taking a jacket off, and there's like his suspenders cut. Like, maybe I have to figure out what movie that's from then. Because that was going to be my push to watch.
It does get windy at several points in the movie, because like things get unhinged because of his wish power. Well, I don't know, somebody wishes for wind. So it is possible that it occurs at some point. But
maybe that was like in a trailer or a commercial, but not in the final cut.
Yeah. I'm concerned that like for the next 20 years, in lieu of characterization, we're going to have Trump allusions. Like, that character does not need to be a stand-in for Trump.
Right.
I like the movie, and I've been getting increasingly frustrated, not at all by Robin's take, but by a lot of the, I feel like people are piling on now, where a lot of people are like, this is one of the worst superhero movies I've ever seen. And I'm like, that is objectively not true.
You see more superhero movies.
Right. But to this specific point, I think that a Trump allusion not working feels more stark, because this movie is coming out now, not in the early days of the election when it should have come out. Mm-hmm. I think it's pointed, and I guess some people were missing it or not like spot on getting that this guy is supposed to be Trump, but because he's a little bit different. One of the first things he says is, I'm a television personality and successful businessman, and he has awful hair and he calls people losers. This guy is Trump. So I think that, yes, in December it feels a little bit weird, but for a movie that was supposed to drop in May of the year where we needed to defeat Trump, having a Trump analog in a movie about how the only path to actual success and power is through the truth and lies inevitably corrupt is like, yeah, that's what this movie's doing. Of course you didn't like him. He's Trump, and we were making an anti-Trump movie.
But they spend a lot of time trying to make him sympathetic, right? It's like, oh, he loves his son some of the time. And, oh, he was beat as a child. Like, I don't give a fuck about that. And especially because Cheetah is interesting to me. I mean, like, I do find the way that she looks by the end of the movie a misstep. But when it's just this mousy girl envies Diana and then wishes to be like Diana, and her life changes in some ways, but in not all the ways that she expected, that she's like still subject to the patriarchy, that's really interesting stuff. And like, you know, the complicated grounds of female friendships when there's a perceived power imbalance. That's interesting stuff. And the whole thing with Wonder Woman is that we're so rarely given female-centered superhero stories. And so it's extra frustrating for me that this movie ended up feeling like it was mostly about a man.
I do think that Pedro Pascal's part, Max Lord, should have been cut down. I would have cut the kid out of the movie entirely. That added nothing to nothing. I think that the Cheetah Kristen Wiig being less important than we were led to believe is a failure of the marketing, a little bit more than it's a failure of the movie. Like, in the narrative of the movie, she occupies a clear place as this, you know, good sidekick that goes bad. Would it have been more interesting to explore her more? Yeah, but
so then that's not a failure of the marketing. That's a failure of the movie.
But how much of if the trailers had it made you think that she was the villain of this movie?
I did not watch the trailer.
Oh, I saw the trailer like a billion times.
Okay,
because the drive-ins have been showing it for a full 9 months because they didn't know when the movie was coming out.
I mean, I mean, like the early reporting on the movie was like, "Hey, they're doing Wonder Woman 2. Cheetah's the villain." So, like,
yeah,
and I certainly didn't know that Max Lord, which is a character I actually remember from the comics, was in it.
No, when I sat down to watch it, I went, oh, Pedro Pascal is in this? Like, that information had completely missed me. This is what I would counter with to, like, the more thoughtful, skeptical side of the Wonder Woman discourse, not just the bad movie side. Is what I'm hearing is it is a narratively messy superhero sequel with a bad villain. So most superhero sequels, like, I know that Wonder Woman, the first Wonder Woman was so good that we were all really rooting for this to be good. To me, it was worse. Like I said, I gave it an 8 when I reviewed it. I would bump that down to a 7 after a second viewing. That's mostly because I think the magic wishing rock is dumb. But like,
and looks like a sex toy.
A little bit. But for me, this just is like the expected loss in quality of a direct superhero sequel. And I don't know why, other than just wanting it, I don't know why that's shocking to people.
I do think that there are superhero sequels that are as good, if not better, than the original. Like Captain America Winter Soldier is significantly better. Spider-Man 2 is amazing. Even going back to Superman 2, I can't remember which critic said this, but I saw somebody say that Wonder Woman 84 is Superman 2 with Superman 4 execution. And I was like, chef's kiss. I don't know. I think that maybe you're right that people are piling on and we're seeing more rage about it than we would if there were a traditional theatrical release. I just don't think it's good. So, and I am ragey. I wanted it to be good. And I feel like something was taken from me.
Yeah, I wonder, in a non-accusatory way, I wonder how much is that. Parts of this reminded me a little bit of a lot of super fan reactions, where there was so much anticipation for this movie. And part of that was circumstantial, where we've been waiting for it for 6 months and 6 extra months. And it was held up as this. We did it on this podcast. We were like, thank God our Christmas is saved by Wonder Woman 1984 coming out. It became more than it had more on it than it could carry just with our own expectations to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But some people just like it. And I'm one of those people. It still is just north of fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Like a good 60 to 70% of critics have liked it. I was one of those. I love the opening sequence. I love the mall rescue.
Mall rescue's fun. I like Chris Pine being excited by modern technology. I don't necessarily think that it was...
spoiler.
Oh, I apologize.
He's in all the commercials and trailers.
I haven't watched any of the trailers.
I was like, the one thing that I had seen was my favorite part of the movie, which I will not spoil for you, but there is a part which is just fully delightful. So yeah, the first hour I was like, I'm on board.
Yeah, but I really liked the desert action sequence, to avoid any further spoilers. when this movie gets around to action sequences, I think they're really good. Not the cheetah fight, that was whatever.
That reminded me of the movie Cats.
Mid-credits scene, one of my favorite reveals in a superhero movie. I will not say any more than that because it was a legitimate shock. But a lot of people, I think Robin, including you the first time around, turned it off as soon as the credits roll and missed.
Oh, I was like, fuck this movie. And turned it off. And Sean was like, but that mid-credits scene. And I was like, ugh. So I was not in the right place to enjoy that.
The one thing, I so rarely push back against anyone who has a take on something in a big movie being problematic, I very rarely go, come on. That said, come on. There's, how do I say this without spoiling it too much? There's some business about how Chris Pine comes back, now that we've spoiled that much, and a secondary character losing some agency in that. And
it bothers me. I don't like
really?
It. Really? Yeah.
I think it is clunkily written. I think that it is thrown off too casually. However, I'm here, like, I have people who are like, Wonder Woman rapes a guy, and I'm like, there are so many actual instances of that in movies that are indefensible that I don't know if it's great to throw that charge around casually. And I think it's being thrown around a little casually here.
I think the movie was casual about the implications of what was going on. And I think it's just so easily written around, and they just were like, nope, we're doing it this way.
Yeah. So the point is, we don't know how you're going to feel about Wonder Woman 1980.
When you say you, we mean Camila.
You, the audience.
You, the audience. Camila, okay. I'm very curious if Camila will like it or not. So if you ever do get around to it.
Yeah, I mean, I will, because I mean, it's Wonder Woman's my girl, and
yeah.
but I mean, I just wasn't like in a rush, but I still wanted to watch it, like sit and watch it uninterrupted, which is difficult.
Oh yeah,
to do for a two and a half hour movie.
I think that this is, I think this is a movie that you want to treat it like you're in the theater,
right?
Yeah,
like I kind of want to immerse myself into it.
Colin made fun of me because he kept talking and I kept pausing the movie, and he was like, oh, you're treating this like we're in the theater. And I'm like, yes, because it's the opposite of last week when I was like, I'm actually really glad I watched Tenet at home so we could pause and talk about it. Like this, I wanted to, you know, escape.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Camila, please watch it and let us know what you think. I think for you just said, like, if Gal Gadot is there as Wonder Woman, it wins automatically.
Right.
It wins by showing up.
Right.
My uncle says this about a Bob Dylan concert today. You're paying to have Bob Dylan walk onto the stage. If he's good when he's there, that's gravy.
That's, he remembers his own lyrics.
Right, right. Hey, Gal Gadot was wearing the Wonder Woman suit. Good movie.
Nice.
That's it,
you know? Yeah.
The fashion is awesome.
Right.
But I did manage to watch four other movies.
Oh, tell Whoa. Us all.
I know, right? This is a big one for me. Okay, so first and foremost, let's get The Call out of the way. That was shit-tastic. So don't watch that.
What is that?
With Halle Berry?
No, with Tobin Bell. And
what's this?
The Saw guy.
Yeah, and the woman from Insidious, the older lady. What is her name? Lynn Shay. And it's set in the 80s. Which, okay, but like there's a bunch of high school kids who are harassing this old couple, Tobin and Shay, and then the old couple flipped the script on them, basically. So it's a horror film, but there's not enough Tobin and Lynn on screen. Like they are the only real actors in this movie, and it's like it's set in the 80s. They're really trying hard to make it look like it was made in the 80s, and it just doesn't work well. And so, I mean, yeah, that's not. It wasn't a good time. But the other ones that I saw The Lie on, was that Amazon Prime original, I believe it was, where Joey, what's her name? King? Is that her name?
Joey King.
Yes.
I like her.
Joey King. She's
she's great.
She's a teenager who kills her best friend and her parents.
On purpose?
Uh-huh. And her parents, Peter Sarsgaard and Morel Enos, they do everything they can to hide this. Happened.
Now you got a story. Yeah.
It's an amazing twist, but there's no sympathetic, like the whole family is fucking trash, but it's a great, it's totally worth a watch. It's a great twist on it. It's a nice little psychological thriller drama. I saw Soul, which beauteous. That was such a good movie. Yep. I missed a couple chunks here or there because I got distracted. But you know, obviously a Pixar, I cried, blah.
Yeah. I was too emotionally fragile to watch Soul over this week.
But, you know, I mean, even though I enjoyed it, like, I still would really, I wish that we can have a person of color as the main character in an animated, in a fucking Disney film that stays a person of color for the majority of the movie. Yeah, for the majority of the movie. Can we do this, please? So, I mean, it just didn't make any sense to me. He didn't have to be a visible blob, like, you know, in the afterlife, like, he could have stayed his own thing, like,
keep his face, make him slightly transparent.
Yeah,
come on.
Yeah, that's, yeah, well, that's how we do ghosts, like,
universal language of ghosts,
right? Exactly. And then, you know, it's a whole nother thing of, like, a white woman stealing his body. Like, it's kind of on a Get Out level. Like, we kind of went there. Like, so even though there were some problems with it, some things that I found a little triggering, I enjoyed it still. And then I finally saw Run with Sarah Paulson, where the Munchausen by proxy thing.
Not Joey King. Joey King is in a different Hulu property about Munchausen by proxy.
Yeah. Right. Yes. This one is the little girl is Kira Allen who plays her daughter. And this was also just a great thriller film. And it was like every moment, like when the moment when the little girl finds out what's happening, like she's 17, when she finds out what's going on and what's happening, like there's so many great shots and scenes of her, like she's wheelchair bound and of her like trying to escape and trying, like you feel it, like the urgency and the tension is there with like every shot. And it's just so well done and well executed. And fucking Sarah Paulson, of course, like always comes to work. She's like, I'm here. Let's do this. Let's get this job done. So, yeah. So I would highly recommend Run also.
I liked Run a lot, too. If you're having one of those days when you're like a little bit stressed out and you're like, I want to sit down on the couch, but now I'm going to look at my phone and I can't relax. Put on Run and you're just going to like fall into that, like, what's going to happen next stupor for 90 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was really good. Like, I was very invested in what was going on. I was like, oh my God, how is she going to get out of this? What's going to happen now? Is this woman going to do this? And it was some cute things in it. Like, you know, I'm assuming the director and or the screenwriter, I don't know who it was, but there were some nods to Misery, the movie Misery. And it, like, it's like visually and just like kind of how the story is set up, you kind of see that. But then like literally like a pharmacist is named Kathy Bates. Like, just in case you missed it, here's Kathy Bates, the pharmacist.
There are at least three, like, we enjoy the works of Stephen King. Not, like, she calls information and the recording is like, say the name of the town you are looking for. For example, Derry, Maine. It's like,
I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Joey King makes me happy because it's nice when a child performer advances in the way that I want them to.
Right.
Because I think I first noticed her in The Conjuring, which is really good, when she was like 13. And I remember thinking, like, you're talented. Please be one of the ones who grows up and stays both sane and talented. And she has.
I think I first became aware of her in Ramona and Beezus. She plays a Ramona.
And I first became aware of her in White House Down, my preferred President in Peril movie from that year.
I had a tense moment this year because this is like Camila and Michael B. Jordan, where like she was on the cover of Mary Beth's issue of Cosmopolitan, and I was like, oh, she looks good. Oh, shit, how old is she? She's 21. She's 21 now.
You're like, okay, still a little bit awkward, but
it's weird, but it's not like 19 then be like, you're allowed to be the youngest person I find attractive,
right?
Congratulations. Well, hey, good news, we all have vetoes.
All fresh to crack open.
So on the one hand, that's like, great, there's no pressure at all on this draw. On the other hand, it's like, is someone really going to use it week one? Isn't there going to be pressure just to accept?
Right.
No, but because as the bingo card last year showed us, other things happen. And truly, I feel like we did two Transformers in a row. I can survive anything.
We can get through this.
I really want it to be the 2005 King Kong. I tried desperately to make a holiday movie that I could see at the drive-in, and then something at the drive-in that makes absolutely no sense for a rebooking. Sure, we'll do that one instead. The number is 221, 221 on the big list. I realize that means nothing to the listener, and yet I always say it. 221 is The Bone Collector.
Ooh.
Cool. I've never seen this.
Really?
And one time Colin was watching it and I watched like 10 minutes of it and I was like, you know what? This movie deserves me to actually watch it. And now I will.
That's funny because we just had John Voight. Now we got Angelina Jolie. And that's, I think, right. Today is Denzel Washington's birthday, or yesterday was, or something like that. Thanks, Tony.
Happy birthday, Denzel.
And he is the greatest actor of all time, period. Yes. So always happy when we have a Denzel movie.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen this either. Is this in the same general series as, like, Along Came a Spider? Or am I thinking of something else?
So it's not the same characters?
I don't know.
But it's the same genre.
Thinking of another thing that is like both Along Came a Spider and The Bone Collector.
What is this, like, right. Lincoln Rhyme?
Hey, by next week, we'll know more about
we'll know exactly where it lies.
It's got a great cast. It's a thriller from 1999 with, as Robin said, the greatest actor of all time. Have we done? Yeah, we did Denzel. We did Crimson Tide. And as we said, we're loving the 90s recently. Mm-hmm. 1999, though this may be. And I'm kind of surprised this was a number one. This seems like a quiet, like, this was number two for 4 weeks for grown-ups when, you know.
What year was this?
When Shrek was popular. 99.
Yeah, I guess it probably makes more sense in certain parts of the year. We'll find out.
Mm. We'll find out what happened and transition from John Voight to the best thing John Voight ever did. Amen. Create Angelina Jolie.
Amen, brother.
Before we get to that, National Treasure was released November 19th of 2004. What was the number one song in America when Nicolas Cage stole the Declaration of Independence?
Eminem?
No.
Usher?
Usher.
Yes.
Yeah.
What song?
Yeah.
No, not yeah.
Burn? Is that what that song was called?
If it is, either it's not what that song is called, or it's a different song.
Usher. Usher.
This is an Usher featuring...
My Boo.
Correct. It is My Boo by Usher featuring Alicia Keys.
Excellent.
Nice.
I don't remember Usher on that song. All I remember is the hook at this point.
Yeah. I feel like that's what Usher's kind of for.
I don't know.
I loved his first album, and I thought he was super attractive, and I think that Ben Vereen is his dad.
Yeah, so Usher's mom.
And if there was a best guest actor, like, you know how the Emmys maybe has, like, best guest actor in a series for someone who is not in anything nearly enough to be supporting actor, but, like, was fun, like... nominate Usher for Hustlers. That was delightful.
Yes.
The best.
Or while we're at it, nominate anybody from Hustlers. It was good.
Justice for J-Lo.
Yeah.